Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. Round 2 of Series Fest begins next Wednesday when 30-plus pilots for new programs go for Rocky Mountain glory and possibly a springboard to landing somewhere. Organizers Randy Kleiner and Kaylee Westbrook join me next. A popular telenovela turns into a weekly drama on USA Network next week. In Spanish, the tale of a woman out to wreck the drug trafficking venture that killed her boyfriend was La Reina del Sur, played by Kate Del Castillo. In English, Queen of the South, and Alex Braga is the star. Executive producer David Friendly pays a visit to us later this hour. Now, where were you 2 decades ago when NBC played Mother, May I Sleep with Danger? Well, whether or not you were around when Tori Spelling headlined the spooky feature, Lifetime offers the made-for-TV remake tomorrow night, executive produced by James Franco. We'll offer director Melody Aikenhead an hour from now. Also forthcoming, another channel gets blacked out by Dish, we'll tell you which one, the answer to this week's classic trivia question, and the TV side of Oscar and now AFI-winning composer John Williams. Star humming. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, live from New York on Blog Talk Radio. This just in, tomorrow will be televised. Brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Listen to audiobooks whenever and whenever you want. Get a free book when you sign up for a 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televised. More details later in the program. Happy to have you aboard for the program All About Television on this Friday afternoon. 72 beautiful degrees here in New York. Definitely a nomination for one of the 10 best days of the year. We're delighted to have you with us for our fan edition. A lot of good people coming away from all over the place, and we invite you, as always, to be part of the program. It's so simple to do. Just give us a call. And here's the number you use, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. That number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. Our chat room is open as well. That's SimonApple04. You'll find it at blogtalkradio.com/televised. And Rick Webb, our good friend from Philadelphia, already in the room. Don't forget, you can connect other people right now by visiting Facebook Timeline. Just click on the Facebook icon on your Blog Talk screen, follow the instructions, and other people can be live with you. The organizers of Series Fest will be live with us again from Denver after these news notes. Dish Network is giving the boot to a second channel this week. NFL Network joined WGN America in getting pulled from the satellite service. Dish made the move last night, impacting about 7 million customers. Red Zone, NFL Network's highlight service covering Sunday afternoon action, was also taken down. WGN America was dropped last Sunday, along with 44 broadcast stations owned by Parent Tribune Media. Once again, carriage payments are the sticking point. At this hour, Dish and NFL Network are reportedly back at the negotiating table to work out a deal. However, Tribune and Dish remain down their separate ways with no plans to resume carriage talks. We will certainly keep you posted on both situations. Oscar-winning songwriter and actor Common has determined his post-Hell on Wheels starring role on television. Variety reports he'll play Black Samurai, a new TV drama series based on the popular 1970s books and 1977 film. Producer Andre Gaines and his Cinemation company will oversee the series and line up an outlet. Separately, Common is executive producing a Showtime series pilot, Dramatizing Life, in Southside Chicago. And next month's Comic-Con event will get a primetime showcase on Sci-Fi for the first time. Will Arnett will host 3 nightly specials from the San Diego Bay Festival, July 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, all beginning at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. And that's news notes for today. More and more, the USA is becoming a TV festival nation, with all sorts of people who want to get into television, getting into special events from New York to Atlanta to Austin, Los Angeles, and back, sometimes with pilots, sometimes with pitches, and trying to make their way into the television world. Last year, there was a new event on the trail. It's called Series Fest. We showcased it last year, and we went so far as to showcase the winners of the best pilot. 20-some pilots were in the first batch, including a pilot that was produced by executive producer John Legend, who later went on to do Underground. This year, it's more than 30-plus in the hunt. Once again, joining us live from Denver, the home of Series Fest, are his co-founders and organizers, Randy Kleiner and Kaylee Westbrook. Randy and Kaylee, great to have you back.
Thank you so much for having us.
So, Randy, we'll start with you. What was the outcome of the first Series Fest? What did you and everyone learn from doing it?
It was a huge success. We had a great response from the local community and from the industry. We had an amazing night opening at Red Rocks with John Legend and Whitney Cummings. And we got some great press from all the major trades. And the response was so great. We have just grown so much in the past year. We went from having 26 independent pilots. This year we have 34. Last year we had 6 panels. This year we're doing 15. Just the response has been so overwhelmingly amazing.
Mm-hmm. And Keely, of the 26 pilots that were showcased, have any of them, including the one that we showcased, the one best pilot, a few weeks later on our program, have any of them taken any ground in terms of trying to make it on the air?
So Witnesses, who I know you spoke to the creators last year, they got a production deal with a production company, and they're retweaking the pilot and working on that and attaching a showrunner. And then another one of our pilots, Entrepreneur, was bought by another production company, which is actually going and producing 6 full episodes of the show to then go and sell that way instead of doing the normal route of, you know, selling it to a network and then having them produce them.
Guess what? I think we may already have a call. Let's see. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Telebot. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hello?
Yes, hi. It's Tom Applebaum from Tomorrow Televised. Who's on the air?
This is Phil. Phil, I'm very excited to be on the show.
Phil, welcome. And we've got the organizers of Series Fest, Randy Kleiner and Kaylee Westbrook on the air. So go for it. You have a question, comment, so go for it.
I appreciate that. I was at your festival last year. I didn't get a chance to say hello, but I'm thinking of coming back next year. And it's very soon, actually. And I'm wondering, there were some panels, I think, that I saw last year. Will you guys have any more information that'll help guide me more as a filmmaker that I can learn from the festival?
Sure, we absolutely do. I think, as Kaylee mentioned, we have 15 amazing, incredible panels this year. But I think if you're, you know, a creator, you know, a couple of them that I would recommend, actually, prior to the festival, kicking off the festival, we're doing a panel this Tuesday night called The Business of Acting, and we have Lisa Vidal from Rosewood coming in. We have a very famous casting director, Jamie Rudofsky, who cast the Gilmore Girls and more, and a big talent agent who will all be coming together to talk about the business of acting. We also have a panel called The Art of the Pitch, where we will be talking about how to pitch not only your series to major networks, to independent, and across all different platforms, but also in film. We're really excited about that. We also are partnering with a couple of major networks this year. One of them, I would say, from TV Land. It's called From Web to TV, and it was about these creators who actually sold their web series to TV Land called Teachers. And they're going to come out and tell you about what that process is like. We also have an incredible panel with NBC where you're going to hear from Jennifer Salke, president, along with their heads of comedy, and Lauren Ash from Superstore, all about sort of how the NBC programming team works in comedy and in diversity. One other one that I would recommend that list would be FX. We're doing The Anatomy of a Show, and you're going to hear from Carlton Cuse, creator of Lost, Kevin Durand, and a whole bunch of people from the Strain team about how to bring, you know, again, how the start of your show all the way through to becoming, you know, multi-season hit, which will be really exciting.
Wow, that was a lot of info. Is there a website that is it Series Fest that I could find that? Is that on there still?
Yeah. www.seriesfest.com, and you can actually see the full lineup, and there's a schedule tab. You can look it up. Schedule your festival. Come say hi to Kaylee and I, please.
Oh, cool. Thanks. I appreciate that.
And so, by the way, we had the stars and creators of Teachers on our show when it started on TV Land. I'm happy to say that the show has been renewed for a second season. So if you want to hear that episode, you can go to our homepage, www.blogcupray.com/televised, or pick up the podcast on iTunes or on Apple TV's iTunes podcast app, and you'll be able to hear that. They were wonderful people, and I'm thrilled that and the show is terrific. And happy that TV Land brought it back for a second season. And prior to that, the creators are going to be at Series Fest. So, Phil, thanks much for the call. Pleasure to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome.
Thank you,
Phil. Have a great time at Series Fest. Phil, joining us live from Denver here on Tomorrow Televised. And if you have a question or comment, ring it in for the folks at Series Fest, Randy Kleiner and Kaylee Westbrook. The number to call in is 646-652-2906. Or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name, our good friend Rick Red from Philadelphia already in the room. We have another 90-minute episode of our program coming your way on Monday. We will kick it off with a composer who may be one of the contenders for the Emmy Award for his work on both Mr. Robot and American Crime Story, The People vs. O.J. Simpson. Matt Quayle will be with us. He's our lead guest. And then next Friday, Disney Channel's got a great doubleheader. It's 100 original made-for-TV movie. It's the adaptation of the popular motion picture, Adventures in Babysitting. We will have the executive producer of the remake, Michelle Manning. And then we'll get into Disney Channel's newest original series. It's called Bizarre Bark. And what iCarly tried to do for the internet and television, this series wants to do for social media and television. You'll hear what I mean when we have the creators of the show. That's Kyle Stengia, Josh Lehman, executive producer Eric Friedman. They'll all be with us Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Televised. Again, Events and Babysitting, followed by Bizarre Bark. Come on next Friday night, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific time on the Disney Channel. Randy, I noticed that, as you mentioned just now with Phil, that you're doing a lot more with panels. Was that because of popular demand?
Yeah, definitely. Our panels were one of our biggest high points last year, and this year we were so lucky to have a lot of partners that came to us and actually pitched us ideas and wanted to be involved. And we just have so many more industry executives coming out this year. We're really excited.
Mm-hmm. Kaylee, what kind of quality difference is there between the first batch of pilots you had last year and this batch of pilots? How have things matured, if you will, in just the last 6 months, in the last 12 months?
Well, I do have to say that I thought our production quality was really great last year, but we saw a huge rise in submissions, and also in some of the pilots, the quality as far as production design and VFX is just, you just can't even compare to what we had last year. We have a pilot that has huge plane crash and all this stuff that you just can't even believe that they went and shot this independently. It's really incredible.
Mm-hmm. Now, Randy, for the first time, you have put a pilot on that actually did not premiere at your festival, but premiered in New York last year, called Dead John. We had the creators of that show, which was shot here in Brooklyn, on our program last year and also on BK Live. Explain why you decided to do that. And this may, do you think that may cause a trend in terms of these different festivals sort of bringing pilots back and forth so we have like a true festival circuit, if you will?
Yeah, you know, you look at the film festival world, which is really where my background is, and there's, you know, thousands of, they all do something a little bit different. They're all unique in their own way. And I think the rise in, you know, as more TV festivals pop up, it's great. You know, I think it just, more people will then want to make, you know, take the opportunity to make more good work. We're excited to have Dead John out here this year. You know, we do have a bunch of world premieres, but we do have some others that have been seen elsewhere, and we're excited to bring it in front of a new audience here in Denver.
Mm-hmm. What effort is there now, Kaylee, to try to make talent development deals happen at the festival, the same way New York has done it for the last decade, where not just you have the opportunity to screen pilots for both network executives as well as for the public, but also to have these people be in competition besides the pilot itself, to be in competition for, let's say, a talent development deal for the likes of an HBO or a Starz or a Lionsgate or a Netflix?
I'm not sure exactly what you're asking, but I feel like I know what New York and other festivals have done as far as introducing them to other industry execs and getting shows off the ground, and I feel like especially this year, we're going to be doing the same thing, maybe in the same way they do. I'm not exactly sure how they do it, or maybe in a different way. We have a lot of execs coming out, a lot of people asking us if they can see the pilots and when the screenings are. So I feel like it is a natural collaboration that is just going to happen with the networks and execs coming out, seeing something and saying, can I talk to those creators and making that introduction.
Mm-hmm.
Organic.
Do you think at some point, Kaylee, that you might introduce, let's say, talent development deals where, let's say, Starz offers $50,000, or let's say Showtime or CBS or Channel 4 in London will offer, a deal to on board for script development, let's say?
No, that's a definitely great question. I mean, I think the way that we like to do it, I mean, and this is more similar to a film festival tradition is, you know, I think that the issue with sort of promising the deals up front is that then if the network might, they have to choose something and they might not be passionate about it, and then something gets tied up for multiple years and never get produced. We really, We really push for a more organic way of picking up things and developing projects so that if, you know, Lionsgate looks at something and says, I have to do that, then we know that they're going to make a deal and go and want to do it versus the other way. I mean, obviously, the goal of this is to generate a marketplace to get as much work sold as possible. So we're always open to ideas, but we really want to make sure that, you know, anything that we that is a partnership with SiriusXM is really in the vein of making sure that these things come to life.
Randy, now that SiriusXM is in its second year, was it easier to line up sponsors? Was it easier to line up talent? Was it easier to get the attention of networks and services to be part of this?
Absolutely. I think the biggest challenge we had last year was time. And I don't know if you remember us talking about this last time, but we launched the whole festival in 4 months. So this year, it was pretty amazing to all of a sudden have a year. And we've obviously had a great proof of concept, as Kaylee mentioned earlier. You know, we had such a great reaction and response. We have people that have gotten behind us, supported us, believed in us, you know, reached out on our behalf. All of a sudden, there was a community here. So that certainly helped. And it was absolutely, we have some pretty incredible new sponsors this year, Delta, MasterCard, Full Screen. We have Lyft on board. And then we also have some additional partnerships that were developed out of the festival. We're doing this really cool 48-hour interactive series jam partnered with an interactive company called Interlude, where actually people in 48 hours are going to be tasked to create an interactive series, a short-form proof of concept, if you will, you know, in that short time frame. And we're really excited about that. And then the winner is going to get $10,000 and be able to shoot a couple of episodes with the backing and support of Interlude and SiriusXM. So we're excited about that.
Kaylee, talk more about Interlude, because we've been following this company, and this is a company that is trying to do what's called choose-your-own-adventure programming, where various points
yep.
in the program get the chance either using your remote control or your smartphone tablet while watching a show on the TV set to direct the show to where you want to go. We know they're working with CBS on a revival of Twilight Zone. They just got a deal yesterday with Sony, a multi-million dollar deal. They've got a famed producer, Will Gluck, now working to try to put content together. It's very interesting that you're now working with them, and it seems that more and more, this isn't a signal to you, and as the internet told you, you know, that we want to be involved with television. We want to do things on the television set.
That's exactly it. I mean, when we sat down at our first meeting, you know, said we really want to be pushing more towards serialized content. And they showed me a couple of the things that they were doing. And, you know, we had this pretty incredible brainstorming meeting for 2 hours and walked out with this idea to sort of task creators in a sort of given time, really short timeline to create these episodes. And we're excited to see, you know, how that comes about. And we really put that together fairly quickly. So we're looking forward to launching it this year and seeing how the relationship continues to develop and our partnership grows.
Well, Randy and Kelly, we have another call. We'll take it. Hello, you're on Smart and Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, great to have you back. You're on the line with the organizer of SiriusXM. Go for it.
Hey, ladies. I'm wondering, if you were speaking to, like, your best friend, what advice would you tell them to do to stay away from, like, the weakest points that some of the pilots might have? Like, would you advise them you definitely have to have somebody famous aligned or acting in the show or good actors or best sound effects? Like, what's your best secret advice?
My best advice would be to make sure that you really develop it before you go and shoot it, that you don't have to have a huge budget. You don't have to have a famous actor. What it really comes down to is really great stories with compelling characters that can live on through many episodes and through many seasons. The biggest mistake we see people make is having one joke or one thing that they think will be funny and not totally thinking it all the way through. And you can see that when we're screening it and also through the series Bible that we ask people to submit. We know that this was just a short film and the characters weren't fully developed and have a conflict and a point of view and a relationship. I mean, for us, we will see things that maybe don't have the best production value, but we'll look at it and we'll go, that was so smart. That was so interesting. I love those characters. I want to watch more. And that's what we always go back to. Do I want to see more of this? And if I do, then it 100% should be a SiriusXM.
cool. Great advice. Well, thanks a lot. Best wishes for the success of the festival. And thank you, Simon.
Thank you. You're very welcome, Rick. Take care. Have a great weekend. Rick Wilber, good friend from Philadelphia, once again on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. We've got the organizers of Series Fest with us live from the Rocky Mountain High Place, Denver, Colorado. That's Randy Kleiner and Kaylee Westbrook. Series Fest begins this Wednesday, June 22nd, runs the Saturday the 26th in Denver at various locations. We'll tell you how you can find out more online shortly. But if you have a question or comment for the organizers, don't wait. Get involved, as Rick just did and Phil did earlier. Call this number, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You will find it at blogtalkradio.com/televised. Coming up in the next half hour, we will talk to the executive producer of USA Network's new series, Queen of the South. It premieres next Thursday night. And then we will have the director of a new Lifetime movie that remakes the film that was carried nearly 20 years ago on NBC called Mother, May I Sleep with Danger. No, it doesn't have Tori Spelling, but it does have James Franco as executive producer and wonderful interesting talent that will join us live from Los Angeles, director Melanie Aikenhead. That's coming up later in the show, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Remember, if you want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Our episodes are available 24/7. They're posted an hour after we go off the air each day. One of the things that your festival, Randy, and the TV, New York TV Festival is doing for the first time this year is they're going to have a script contest, where in addition to looking at pilots, they're looking at scripts. And in their case, they are getting scripts in the comedy area. You're doing scripts of any kind of show. And tell us about why you decided to introduce a script competition here.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're really interested in you know, helping creators from all different points of view. And obviously, everything starts with a story. And so we really wanted to focus on comedy because we hear that that's, you know, from our industry executives, that that's always like the hardest thing is to find a really great comedy. And we were lucky enough to get scripts from all over the world. And we had like 30 readers going through and reading these scripts. And we finally pared them down and we're excited. We partner with Yay Big and Parallel Entertainment out of LA. And how it works is we narrowed it down to three finalists. We fly them out to the festival. They're going to take part in 3 days of workshops. We have mentors coming in who are industry professionals. And then it culminates in a live read of their script in front of an audience. And then the winner gets a development deal.
Kaylee, something else you're doing for the very first time is a crowdfunding panel. And you're working with a company that, unlike Indiegogo and Kickstarter, has not been known in terms of working on television projects for crowdfunding. They're called Scene Spark. They're mostly with film. And two things. First of all, why a crowdfunding panel this time around? Secondly, like I mentioned with Interlude, are you getting the impression that Scene Spark wants to make a move into television as well as film with their projects?
Yeah, absolutely. Scene Spark is a company that I've been following for quite a bit of time now. And the CEO, Emily Best, approached Kaylee and I about doing a panel here. We're really excited about what they do. And a little bit differently is, you know, it's more curated. And they also help you not only through the crowdfunding process, but through production and distribution. And we are actually going to be making a big announcement with them coming up this Tuesday. So everyone should stay tuned on the Series Fest social media and website to hear what that is. But, yes, we're going to be we're excited to announce something big with them soon.
And incidentally, will that panel cover equity crowdfunding? Now that the Securities and Exchange Commission has approved the equity crowdfunding rules, they went into effect finally last month. We know the company called Legion M that we covered that is already working with the equity crowdfunding rules to fund what they call the fan-based entertainment studio. Is that going to be covered in your panel?
That's a great question. I'll have to ask the Seed and Spark team if that's on the docket here. It's really, they lead the workshop, so I'm not sure. I'm not entirely sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Randy or Kaylee, you can take this question. As you know, since the Academy Awards, there has been stepped-up efforts to try to get more women, more people of color, more women of color into both television and film. On the TV side, projects like We for She, We Did It Together, made by women, and so on and so forth. Are there any plans in Series Fest to try to either, A, encourage more newcomers who are women or women of color, people of color, to do pilots? Secondly, what about doing a venture like a We for She or a venture Lifetime is doing on their own, where they're trying to raise new women talent, et cetera, that you might try, like, let's say, a separate project along that line?
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely had this conversation a lot, not even even before the Academy Awards brought it up. I mean, look, we're two women who started a television festival, and a lot of people looked at us, and because we were two women, they thought we couldn't do it. And so for us, it's always about empowering all artists, but especially raising awareness about diversity and having women's stories told and told by women. And we have, of course, some more announcements that we can't tell you about right now, but in the next week, two diversity initiatives that we're working on that we'll be announcing next week. And also, I just think it's really exciting. If you look like at our NBC panel, it's all women on there. You know, you have Jennifer Salke and Grace Wu and Lauren Ash. I mean, and that wasn't us saying, like, oh, we want a panel of all women about women. It was we went to NBC, and this is who they brought out. So I feel like the tides are changing, and it's really exciting.
And I would say in our independent pilot competition as well, we have a really great diverse selection. I mean, and I think it goes to show, you know, because people are able to now go out there and create work independently, they're not – and they don't have to appeal to the broader audience. They're able to target. We're seeing more diverse work naturally and organically happen that way.
Mm-hmm. Finally, at some point with all of these festivals going on, not just New York, L.A., U, Atlanta, Austin, but also specialized things like Urban World, the American Black Film Festival, which is digging more into television. Do you see some sort of interplay at some point where you work directly with other festivals and you really make this a circuit that really is very inclusive of each other?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we actually talk about that all the time. I mean, we're certainly, you know, our whole thing is about building a community. And I think to take the next step in doing that, it is going to be working with these other festivals, collaborating, and, you know, again, figuring out a way to continue to support artists in a larger mission.
Mm-hmm. The project is Series Fest. Round two kicks off this coming Wednesday, June 22nd, runs the 26th at various sites in Denver, Colorado. If you want to find out more about all of Series Fest, both last year and this year's event online, here's where you go, www.seriesfest.com. That's www.seriesfest.com. Once again, it takes place in Denver from June 22nd to the 26th. Randy and Kelly, before I go, I'd like to extend this invitation because you gave us a lot of wonderful news today. So here's what I'd like to do. As I mentioned last year, we would like to have the best pilot winners on an upcoming issue of our show. However, given the thing you were going to announce on Tuesday with Seed and Spark, the deal with Interlude, the diversity initiative, here's what I'd like to do. Whatever you announce, please extend an invitation to those folks that we would like to have them on our show this next Friday. We'll save an hour. We'll save a half hour. And if somebody from Steven Spark would like to come on, if somebody from Interlude would like to come on, if somebody from whoever you're working with on diversity initiatives would like to come on next Friday, we would love to have them. So let's stay in touch. We'll stay in touch with Lee Meltzer, your public relations person. And depending on what you announce, if they would like to be on this program a week from today, we would love to have them.
Absolutely. We would love to do that, and we'll make sure they're free.
All righty. Randy Klein or Kaylee Westbrook, thank you again for joining us. All the best with the second time around with your festival. First time around was dynamite. Oh, I forgot to mention, by the way, one other thing. Your opening night. Talk about that for a second. Want to make sure that we get that detail in.
It's funny. We were both just sitting here going, we never talked about opening night. We're really excited. We're doing, for the first time, we're doing a network premiere at Red Rocks, BBC America's The Hunt, which is a nature show shot in 4K. Never seen before with this kind of technology. And we're going to be outdoors at Red Rocks Amphitheater, 9,000 seats. It's going to be pretty incredible, followed by a performance by international pop star Sia. So we are so excited. That's June 22nd at Red Rocks Amphitheater. We're pretty excited for opening night.
And will this be the performance that Sia shows her face and takes off the hat or whatever? You'll just have to be there to find out.
Absolutely.
Randy Clark, Kaylee Westbrook, thank you again for joining us. All the best with Series Fest round number two. It looks like it's going to be dynamite, and we appreciate you taking the time this Friday to be aboard with us again.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome,
thank
Randy
you.
And Kaylee. Have a sensational weekend. Take care.
Thank you.
Randy Kleiner, Kaylee Westbrook, the organizer of Series Fest, joining us live from Denver, Colorado. Once again, depending on what is announced next week with Seed and Spark, with Interlude and Diversity Initiatives and other things, we will invite the people involved in those ventures to be with us on this program 1 week from today. This is Tomorrow We Televised. We are the program all about the world of the tube. We're with you Mondays and Fridays, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Coming up again on next Monday's show, we will have a possible Emmy nominee in the world of music composition for his work on Mr. Robot and American Crime Story, The People vs. O.J. Simpson. Composer Matt Quayle will join us. Also, we'll showcase both sides of a very interesting Disney Channel doubleheader 1 week from tonight, the movie Americans and Babysitting, which is the remake of that popular movie with Elizabeth Shoe, directed by Chris Columbus. It's Disney Channel's 100th original film. And also, we will have the crazy executive producers of a new TV series premiering that night right after that film, Bizarre Bar. That's all coming up next Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We'll Be Televised. We come back, we go to Los Angeles, and we'll be speaking with the executive producer of the next new drama from USA Network. It comes your way next Thursday night. It's Queen of the South, the adaptation of the hit telenovela from Telemundo, La Reina del Sur. David joins us live from LA, after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. You are listening to the best internet radio on the planet, www.blogtalkradio.com. More than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It is your home for the popular series Saturday Morning with Joy Keane. Join a wonderful guest and a great conversation this Saturday, tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern. That's 8 a.m. Pacific, exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. Remember, Best of BTR comes your way 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the Bobby Toe Live, special 90-day edition coming your way on a Friday afternoon. Simon Applebaum here with you live from New Web, New York on Blog Talk Radio. And we have some more great guests coming your way in the hour ahead. If you'd like to reach and be with them, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Rick Webber from Philadelphia is still in the room. Coming up later in the hour, we will have the answer to this week's classic trivia question and go to the TV side of the Oscar now AFI winning composer John Williams, who was honored on an AFI Life Achievement Award special that was on TNT this past Wednesday night. Well, last year, USA Network made waves with a series called Mr. Robot. And it's won a lot of awards since, including last month's the Peabody Award. A lot of people think it's a shoo-in for Emmy nominations. Well, next Thursday night, USA Network has got its latest original drama coming on the air, and it's been long anticipated, and it's already getting over 100,000 likes on Facebook. It's Queen of the South, the adaptation of the hit telenovela on Telemundo several years ago, La Reina del Sur, at that time starring Kate Del Castillo, this time around starring an actress I think a lot of people will consider one of the breakout stars of the year, Alice Braga. Joining us live from Los Angeles, an interview exclusive executive producer, David Friendly. David, it's great to have you here.
Thank you. It's nice to be on your show, and thank you for having me.
It is a pleasure, David. So what's the mood between you, cast, and crew about Queen of the South? Is everyone hoping for another Mr. Robot, like that show last summer, Catching Wildfire?
Well, obviously, we are thrilled to be on the network that brought you Mr. Robot. It's one of my personal favorite shows. And actually, what I think is so exciting about their show and our show is it's helping to rebrand USA, which is now a very kind of cooler, hipper destination for viewers than it has been in the past. And that was all intentional. When we brought the show to them, you know, I wouldn't say concerned, but it was a point of discussion as to how far they were going to let us go. And I have to say, there was no interference. We were allowed to push the envelope. And the show that we delivered that comes on next Thursday is a very authentic, gritty, and, you know, sometimes quite dark look at the real world of the cartels. And that was very important to us creatively, that the show feel authentic. And we're at the right place. USA is the right network for this show right now.
Obviously, given the tie-in with Telemundo, because both are owned by parent NBC Universal, there's been a lot of excitement about trying to adapt some of Telemundo and Spanish-language novellas into weekly series. They're also working on a possible Señora Cerro, which is another novella that Telemundo ran over the last couple of years. What stood out for you about adapting La Reina del Sur into Queen of the South? What made you thought, hey, this adaptation can fly?
Well, let me just correct one thing you said, because it's an important distinction. La Reina del Sur started as a very, very respected South American novel by Arturo Perez Reverte. The book was adapted into the very successful telenovela on Telemundo. When I approached Telemundo to find out about the English language rights to La Reina del Sur, I was directed to Arturo Perez Reverte because the English language rights to the book were what would be needed to do an American television show. And so we're very, very separate things. Our show is not based on the telenovela. It's based on the novel. And our show is a one-hour drama as opposed to telenovelas, which are usually half-hour multi-episode per season. So we're really different animals. We have enormous respect for what they accomplished and their success. But our story is sort of inspired by and based upon the novel. So I just want to make that clear because a lot of people don't really understand that.
Mm-hmm. And yet, it's a very cinematic program in its own way. There's sort of like, when you see it, at least from the clips I've seen, there's a little Robert Rodriguez in it. There's a lot of flavor in it. It has sort of like this expansive scenery kind of feel. At the heart is this very intimate personal story of this woman who's been scorned because she lost her boyfriend thanks to a drug cartel, and she decides to infiltrate the cartel to exact her revenge.
Yeah, I mean, the thing we like to say is she does not choose this world. The world is thrust upon her. When her boyfriend is killed, and he was somebody who flies planes for the cartels, she's told, you know, you have a certain amount of time to go to this safe house, and there you're going to find some money and some drugs, and you better use it to get out of Mexico. And the pilot is the story of her literally trying to escape her surroundings. Once she gets to America, which is where the bulk of the show takes place, it is ultimately a show that's very much about survival. How is a woman going to survive in this world that is dominated by vicious men, so to say? And so what makes our show very distinctive is we have a female protagonist in what is traditionally a male-dominated world.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, you look far and wide for the person that would be that female empowered protagonist. How did you come up with Alice Braga?
Well, it was a lengthy process, as you suggested. We had the best casting directors in the television business, Libby Goldsmith and Junie Hunty-Lowry, who kept cast many shows that we've all watched and are highly regarded, and so began a worldwide search. The writers of the pilot, who were Josh Miller and Mark Fortin, they're the ones who wrote the script that got the show, got the pilot made, had been talking about her for some time because they were familiar with her work in City of God and I Am Legend. She's known primarily as a film actress, and no one knew if she would be willing to actually, you know, cross over and do television. As it turned out, a good friend of hers had given her the book 4 or 5 years ago and said, you should play Teresa Mendoza. And I think that Alice actually saw something that was a certain part of destiny, that we would come after her friend had given her the book. And I have to say, we probably looked at, you know, literally over 100 different ideas for this part, but we all felt that Alice would be the perfect Teresa Mendoza, and she has done an incredible job.
It looked like she was on her way to becoming the latest example of what has been, David, a breakout year for new talent on television, especially female talent. Her, Riley Keough from The Girlfriend Experience, on and on and on. Cool. Melis Garfaro from Wyatt Earp on Sci-Fi, Sister Network USA, and just on and on and on. It just seems this is a year where we're seeing so many breakout roles, particularly with breakout roles for women, and especially women of color.
Yeah, and I mean, there are so many television shows now. Many breakout actors are coming through, but there are also people we've seen before. Taraji Henson in Empire would be an example, and, you know, so many other actors that we've known from the feature world. But what's interesting is that so many of these parts now are women at the center. And you know, this is very much a show that is a kind of a female empowering. And what I think what gives us distinction is seeing a woman in power in this world.
David Friendly is the executive producer of Queen of the South, the USA Network's latest drama series, and it premieres this coming Thursday night at 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. David's live with us from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum, who you from the other coast, New York, here on Blog Talk Radio. Glad you're with us this Friday afternoon, 90-minute special edition. We're usually on 3 to 4 Eastern, that's noon to 1 Pacific Time, on this very, very internet spot stuff. And if you have a question or comment for David, give us a ring. 646-652-2906 is the number to use. And that number is good anywhere. Catch us across the country, around the globe here on Blog Talk. We still have our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. You'll find it at blogtalkradio.com/televise, our homepage. And Rick of our friends in Philadelphia is still in the room. Go through how the show develops from episode one next Thursday. We have this protagonist. She has been wronged because she suffered a personal tragedy. Her boyfriend is killed by this cartel. And where does the story go from there in terms of direction and in terms of not only just direction but issues?
Well, you know, this is a show that is ultimately we wanted it to take place in America. The pilot, just backing up a sec, the first episode takes place entirely in Mexico City. We shot it all in Mexico. The very beginning of episode 102 is you will find our lead character, Teresa Mendoza, in she doesn't even know where she is ultimately, but she's in a warehouse and she's practically a victim of human trafficking. She arrives penniless, and initially the beginning part of the season is just about whether or not she can survive. And she's being asked to do some very dangerous things. They're testing her for her loyalty. And so begins a very long arc of her infiltrating and rising up the ranks of this cartel. I don't want to give away too much of the plot, but you're going to see her go from the very, very bottom all the way to the top.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, a show like this, and like the original, and like other programs like Narcos on Netflix, the Pablo Escobar miniseries that was presented on television, El Patron del Mar, etc. When you deal with a subject like drug trafficking or the drug culture or the drug lords, there's always this fine line of whether how far you go and how you try to not glorify the trade to make it, oh, these are Pablo, for example, Pablo Escobar is a hero as opposed to being a villain or at maybe the most an anti-hero. How do you work with your scriptwriters and your directors to deal with that fine line of, you know, being true to the character, being true to the situation, but also walking the fine line between showcasing these people for who they are, as you say, the gritty nature of who they are, as opposed to the glory nature, or like these are people you exemplify or modify or revel for or root for?
Well, you know, obviously it's a very timely question and a very good question, so and well articulated by you. I think there are many discussions that I was privy to in our writer's room where we were having this some version of what you're talking about right now. And I think what you have to always be conscious of is that, first and foremost, the show has to feel real. You can't do a fairy tale version of a cartel story because the bar has already been set sometimes through examples of shows you mentioned, sometimes through a movie like Sicario. So, unfortunately, and this is something you can't really escape, the violence is a part of this world. So to do a show about the drug cartels that did not incorporate violence in some way would be untruthful. We want our show to be authentic. We want it to be a show that you believe could actually happen. And we went to great lengths to make sure that everything within the show, at least, is based in part on things that have actually happened in that world. And so we feel very confident that what we're delivering is more a reflection of a reality. We're not creating a reality. We're reflecting what is already going on. We never glamorize drugs. Far from it. In fact, we show very clearly the damage, the collateral damage to families and people who are caught up in this very dangerous world and what can happen to them. But we're not, this is not some wish fulfillment movie or story that suggests that it would be really cool to be in the drug trade. Far from it.
This is your first television series. You're now a member of the increasing number of people who are coming from, you know, from film or independent film, or from playwriting, or from novels and literature to get into television, where you either run the show or you create and run the show. And people don't know, you should know that you've been responsible for a lot of terrific movies over the years, including two of my favorites in recent years, Little Miss Sunshine and Courage Under Fire. What had you have this be your first television series?
Well, you know, I've been trying for a while. First of all, you have to understand that the movie business is getting smaller and smaller in a certain way. The dollar volume is just as high, but the number of movies released is shrinking by the major studios. And as I often say, very often, unless the character is wearing a cape, they're not interested. And so a lot of what used to be the province of the movie world, sort of like the mid-level drama or a mid-priced story about character, is now being handled, and handled quite well, by the way, by the television business. So there was a natural exodus of film producers who haven't necessarily given up movies. I'm certainly not giving up on producing movies. I just did one with Pierce Brosnan. But I recognize that if I want to keep my career going and I want to keep working, which I always do, that there seemed to be some opportunity here in the television space. This is not the first time I've tried to do television, but it is the first time that we got something that is actually going to be on the air. So that's very exciting for me. And I want to point out something that maybe some of your audience doesn't fully understand, but it is important. These stories are generated by a room full of writers who work 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I am the what they call the non-writing EP. It is a story that I brought to the team, but I don't write the shows, and I would never take credit for that. I am so grateful to my showrunners and my writers because they've worked so hard to develop 13 hours of what I think is really exemplary television.
So how, David, do you adapt your style of leadership, whether producer, executive producer, to the television environment where you deal with different directors for episodes, you deal with a writing room, as well as guys that come in and out, cast members that come in and out, an ongoing character in what Alice Braga plays. How do you adapt what you do for film for television? And then also along the way, what traits do you develop? What qualities do you develop just from the television process that you add on to your repertoire?
Well, let me just begin by saying this is the hardest thing I've ever had to do in the business, much harder than any movie I've ever produced, because of one simple thing. There is an enormous volume of material. Each script has a story area, an outline, then a script. Each episode has a director. We have 11 different directors working on 13 hours of television. There is an enormous volume of notes coming from both the studio that developed the show and the network that broadcasts the show. And my job is really, I'm a traffic cop a lot of the time, putting people together, making sure everybody's voice is heard. And addressing your first question, I have constantly talked to the actors and the showrunners about my vision for the show, which is that I want it to look like a film each week. And I think you can accomplish that today. I don't want to get into a big technical conversation about cameras and digital, but there's no reason television can't look every bit as good as film today. They're basically shot up with the same technology. And when you have the kind of resources that USA has given us, I think it's well within our reach. And so what I'm trying to do constantly is say, let's bring our game up. Let's make this look as good as anything you would see going into a movie theater. And I think we've accomplished that. On a side note, I think you might find this amusing, but my wife, Priscilla Friendly, is a very accomplished film editor who cut movies like Pretty Woman and going back to American Pie and The Proposal and lots of other movies, and we brought her in to be the supervising editor to do just what you were talking about in your initial question, which is to simply raise the bar. And the way you do that is by bringing in the best people, the most experienced people, and the people that are kind of, you know, they're addicted to professionalism, and And so that's how we do it.
Queen of the South, starring Alice Braga, adapted from the novel Lorraine Del Sur, and of course, which begat the wonderful telenovela several years ago with Kate Del Maceo. It premieres this Thursday night, that's June 23rd, 10 p.m. East Pacific time on USA Network. We've got the executive producer, David Friendly, live with us in Los Angeles this half hour, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum here with you. Thanks for joining us on this Friday afternoon of June 2016. Happy to have you aboard. If you have a question or comment for David, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Coming up later on the program, the answer to this week's classic trivia question, and we will go live again to Los Angeles. We will hear from the director of Lifetime's newest original movie. It's a remake of a film that NBC ran 20 years ago called Mother, May I Sleep with Danger. It doesn't star Tori Spelling as the original did, but it's executive produced by James Franco, and the director, Melody Aikenhead, will join us from L.A. That's next half hour right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Also, I have some thoughts about the TV side of Oscar-winning composer John Williams, who this past Wednesday was on TNT receiving the prestigious American Film Institute Life Achievement Award. First time, by the way, that a composer has won that honor, which has been around for over 40-something years. You mentioned earlier that USA has given you a lot of leeway to push the envelope. Give me an example of how you were able to do that with the series.
Well, can I give you one very specific example? There's a sequence in the pilot where the first time that Elise Braga hears, Teresa Mendoza hears the phone ringing, which is the signal that her boyfriend is dead, she's in a bathtub. We happen to have a quick little shot of her watching Scarface, which is a little homage, tip of the hat. She gets up out of the tub and runs downstairs to grab the phone. Well, when she gets out of the tub, she's completely naked. And I thought, well, USA is going to make us edit this. And lo and behold, it is the way it was shot. No body doubles, no filters, nothing. That's just Elise in the flesh. And give her credit for being willing to do that and being such a professional. That's just a tiny example. But the other examples that I could give have to do with, you know, obviously some of the intense violence. People, unfortunately, get shot in the show. There's incidents of extreme violence, which I told my 93-year-old stepmother in Riverdale, New York, that there are some things she's going to have to turn away from. But never once did they make us dial back the intensity. And I'm really happy about that because, as I said over and over, authenticity is what's most important to me.
How, by the way, are you already starting to think of how will this show evolve into a second season and beyond if you get that opportunity from USA?
Well, first of all, can you make sure that happens?
Well, we certainly can do our bit, along with hopefully you know what you put together on the TV critics and those thousands of people who are catching you on Facebook and Twitter. So that's a base to work with.
Yeah. Thank you. To answer your question in a serious way, the beauty of this show, okay, very often when you create a new show, the showrunners or the writers are able to lay out one season without much difficulty, but then they're sort of stuck. You have to realize that the arc of our character, which comes from the novel, it is a slowly unfurling arc where she will rise from the bottom of the business all the way up to the top. So there is no shortage of material for seasons 2, 3, 4, 5, if we were so lucky, because you're going to be watching the transformation of a character with nothing to somebody who has everything. And that does not happen overnight, not in the real world. And so the audience is hopefully going to go on this journey with us that where they will see her progress into this, you know, character that seemingly has it all, but at the same time is trying to retain her dignity as a human being.
The journey of Queen of the South, played by Alice Braga, starts this Thursday night. That's June 23rd, 10 p.m. Pacific time on USA Network. Check your local food where USA is available in your area on cable and satellite. For more details about the program online, go to www.usanetwork.com. That's www.usanetwork.com. Queen of the South, played by Alice Braga, Thursday night, 10 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. Executive Producer David Friendly, thank you again for joining us. All the very best to you, your cast and crew, and hopefully a very, very long run in store.
Hopefully we'll be talking to you next year during season two.
I'll tell you what, let's make that a deal. It's been an absolute pleasure. Take care. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Simon.
You're welcome. Take care. David Friendly, executive producer of Queen of the South, joining us live from Los Angeles. The answer to this week's Classic Trivia question coming your way after some words from the fine people at Audible.com. If you are a Downton Abbey fan, you're familiar with the wonderful work of its creator, Julian Fellowes. Well, Julian's got more TV projects on the way, including a new one for PBS that will be premiering next year or the year after. But he also has a very interesting book series that you can hear right now through Audible.com. It's called Belgravia, and it's narrated by a wonderful actress named Juliette Stevenson. And all you got to do to check out that, or any of the more than 180,000 titles available to you through Audible.com, is to go to this URL and sign in for a 30-day free trial and make Belgravia your book. That address is audibletrial.com/televised. That's audibletrial.com/televised. Audible.com is a leading provider of spoken digital entertainment and information. And with those 180,000 titles to choose from, every genre possible, and then a few you might not know about, you can listen to them on any device, including whatever you are hearing us on right now through Blog Talk Radio. Remember, if you sign up at audibletrial.com/televised, you get one free audiobook of your choice and a one-month trial. And don't forget, because it's from Amazon.com, the customer service is absolutely fantastic. So what do you got to lose? Give it a try. audibletrial.com/televised. audibletrial.com/televised for an incredible sound experience that can last a lifetime. Audible.com and Amazon Company. And now it's time for the answer to this week's classic trivia question. Sorry to say, we did not get a winner this week, so nobody picks up Twin Peaks FAQ, the brand new book from Forbes Books about that classic ABC series, which will be revived by Showtime next year. The question? Name the newsroom's network. Name the newsroom's network. We would have taken either the full name or the acronym. The name, Atlantis Cable News, or ACN. Atlantis Cable News, or ACN. So, sorry nobody got it this time around, but we'll try it all again on Monday. We'll give you another classic trivia question of the week during our 90-minute presentation at that time. And if you are first with the correct answer, you can win Twin Peaks FAQ, published by Applause Books. Incidentally, coming Monday on BK Live, the talk show I do on here in New York on BRIC TV, we will have the authors of Twin Peaks Live in our studio, David Bushman and Arthur Smith. They're both curators at the Paley Center for Media here in New York. One of them is based in New York, one is based directly in Brooklyn. I think not far off of where we are doing this program. And it'll be fun to have them in the studio. So if you're in the New York area, check on BK Live, this Monday from noon to 1 on BRIC TV. BRIC TV is available wherever you are in New York on Verizon Fios. If you are a cable customer in Brooklyn, it's available on Charter for only Time Warner Cable, RCN and Cablevision Systems. It's also streamed live at BRICArtsMedia.org and posted the very next day, both the segment and the full episode, at YouTube.com/BRICTV. That's YouTube.com/BRICTV. So again, we will have another classic trivia question for you on Monday's show. If you know the answer, don't wait. Email me, SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and your full mailing address. And if you are first with that correct answer before our next Friday episode, you will win Twin Peaks FAQ. And if you're not available on Monday, don't worry, because I do post the question on my Facebook page the following morning. I also post it at my own Twitter hashtag, at UBCSimonTWVT. That's at UBCSimonTWVT. And incidentally, we have a Twitter option for you, so if you find email a little bit cumbersome, no problem. Go to this Twitter hashtag, it's TWVT, and put your answer in there. That's Twitter, hashtag TWBT. And that Twitter option is made available by the wonderful people at Hopscotch. The folks invite you to create your own social soundtrack. You can learn how at www.hopscotch.com. www.hopscotch.com. This is Tomorrow We Televise, the program all about television. We are with you Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Coming up on our show next Monday, another 90-minute edition for you. We'll have a composer who may very well be an Emmy, maybe a double Emmy nominee, for his work on Mr. Robot and American Crime Story, The People vs. O.J. Simpson. Matt Quayle will be our lead guest. And then a Disney Channel doubleheader. Next Friday night, Disney Channel is presenting its 100th original made-for-TV movie. It is the remake of the popular film with Elizabeth Shue and directed by Chris Columbus, Adventures in Babysitting. We'll have executive producer Michelle Manning. And then we will have the people behind a new series that we'll try to do for social media, what iCarly did for the web. It's called Bizarre Bar. We will have the creators, Kyle Stadia and Josh Lennon, and the executive producer Eric Freeman. They will all be with us. That's next Monday, 3 to 4:30 Eastern. That's noon to 1:30 Pacific, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Coming up for our next half hour, we will focus on the TV side of Oscar-winning composer John Williams, who this past Wednesday got the American Film Institute's annual Life Achievement Award, a ceremony that was televised on TNT. But surprisingly, they didn't talk about his TV work, which led to his film work. So we'll connect the dots coming up. But first, well, Lifetime has a brand new movie coming out tomorrow night. It is the remake of a film that originally premiered nearly 20 years ago on NBC, Mother, May I Sleep with Danger. James Franco is the executive producer, and director Melody Aikenhead joins me live from L.A. after we pause at the top of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, which opens the best internet radio around. Always, more than 25 million listeners around the world every month and growing. It's your home for the hottest new game show on radio or television, Trivia Warfare. Take your trivia knowledge, put it to the test. It's war on Trivia Warfare, Sunday nights right here on Blog Talk Radio. Remember that the BTR 24/7 comes your way at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the Marvy Tall Eyes on this Friday afternoon, and welcome to those of you just joining us at the top of the hour. Simon Applebaum here with you, delighted to be aboard wherever you are on Blog Talk Radio on this Friday afternoon. 72 degrees, top of the hour here in New York. It's an absolutely beautiful day here in the Big Apple. We have another great guest coming your way on this expanded edition, so if you have a question or comment for that person, bring it in. It's simple. Use this number, 646-652-2906. 646-652-2906. Number of anywhere you're catching across the country around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio. Chat room going, as it has been all show long. Simon Apple 04 by name at blogtalkradio.com/televised, our wonderful homepage. And Rick Webb, our friend from Philadelphia, is in the room. In September of 20 years ago, NBC premiered a made-for-TV movie that originally was going to be released in theaters, but somehow got trapped into television. The film was called Mother, May I Sleep with Danger. Tori Spelling of Beverly Hills 90210 was the big star. Well, tomorrow night, Lifetime is bringing that film back in a remade edition with James Franco as executive producer, and a very intriguing plot twist under the same name. Joining us live from Los Angeles is an internet radio exclusive, the director of the new version of Mother, May I Sleep with Danger, Melody Aikenhead. Hi, Melody.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
Very fine, thank you. How did you get yourself into making this remake?
Yeah, James approached me with the opportunity. I met James when I was doing my master's at USC. He was teaching a class where we were 10 directors picked to direct his feature film based on his book, Actors Anonymous. And then we, after that movie, we started developing another project. And then later last year, he reached out with Mother, May I Sleep with Danger. So that's how I got on board.
What is the appeal of this film for 20 years ago, and what did you and James see in remaking the film that would give it a new life, not just a revived life, but a life all its own?
Yeah, you know, it was such a, you know, the original Mother, May I Sleep with Danger had such a cult following, and people really seemed to enjoy the movie. And then when I watched it, James was the one with the idea about revamping the movie and bringing in lesbian vampires. And bringing in that angle, which I thought was such a great angle. And also, it's if you look at the original movie, you know, it's a girl in distress, right? And it's like it's more pertinent to the 1990s films. I feel like female characters were portrayed a little less strong than they are nowadays. So with this movie, we really wanted to do a subject matter that was more pertinent to the times we're living in now, and have stronger female characters helm the movie.
So how does a vampire love story reflect the times?
Well, vampires, you know, the queer theory, the vampire fascination in society, coming out, you know, to your mother, issues of identity. We also play the sexual assault, which is so prevalent nowadays. So we really have that theme weaved out throughout the movie, which is really important to us.
Mm-hmm. So tell us what the plot is all about and where in the film does it deviate from the original?
Yeah, so it really, I mean, again, it's a complete remake. We did keep a couple of elements from the original. So if you were a fan of the original, you're going to watch this new movie, this new remake, and be like, oh, that part, you know, that dinner scene is exactly taken from the original. Or, you know, the fact, like, simple character things, like the fact that Julie, the mom, played by Tori Spelling, you know, she doesn't cook, right? So she gets takeout dinner, and that's what she's going to serve when Leah is bringing Pearl over. So those little things are taken from the original. And in this remake, it deals with Leah being the main character, and she's in love with a vampire, with a lesbian vampire. Now, she doesn't know she's a vampire. She finds out in the middle of the film, and Julie, the mom, played by Tori Spelling again, senses something's wrong when she finds out that Pearl is not a student at the university that she claims to be part of. And then the whole plot unravels from that. And, well, I don't want to give too much away since it airs tomorrow. And we hope everybody tunes in to watch it.
Now, Tori and Ivan Sergei, who was also in the original film, reunite here. What would you like to, first of all, meet them, have them on the set in key roles, not just like a cameo deal? And what do they think about the opportunity to revisit the character? Was there something that they say they wanted to do in the original that they couldn't, and they got the chance in this film to do something that they had always thought about for two decades?
Yeah, you know, Tori Spelling and Ivan Sergei were great. They were really on board with doing the remake. They had such a great time doing the original. So then when they caught wind that it was a lesbian vampire story, Tori got really excited. So did Ivan Sergei. We brought Ivan Sergei to play the professor. Tori Spelling, she plays the mom in this. So it was interesting to work with Tori and hear her ideas of how, you know, now she's playing the mom. In the original, she was playing the daughter in distress, and now she's playing the mother. So really different roles, but we kept the same sort of, like, if you watch the original, it has this quality to it where you almost can't take it too seriously. You know, the material speaks for itself. Like, there's almost this, in this remake, you'll see, like, it's super campy, it's fun, but you almost, there's a sense that you're not really taking it that seriously, which is sort of like paying homage to how the original was.
Mm-hmm. Was that the marching order you gave to everybody in the cast? Don't take it too seriously?
No, not at all. You can't do that, you know, because the moment you tell, you can't talk to the actors and you can't talk to the team and be like, oh, we're not taking this too seriously. Not at all. You play the emotions for real. The characters are all rooted in reality. You know, when you're playing the scene and your girlfriend is just telling you she's a vampire, you got to play it for real. You know, you can't, even though the material, you know, it has humor in it, and then, you know, it's something that can't really happen, you still have to play it, you still have to root it in reality. But then when you watch the movie, the material itself lends itself to, for it to not be taken that seriously. The audience reaction.
Melanie Aikenhead is the director of the latest Lifetime original movie. It is a remake of a film that originally played on NBC back in September of 1996, Mother, May I Sleep with Danger. Tori Spelling and Ivan Sergei were the co-stars of that film. They are back in the remake, which also includes performances by Leland George, Emily Mead, and Nick Ebersman from a wonderful movie called Wild that came out last year. This movie with Laura Dern and her Oscar-nominated performance. Melanie joins us live from Los Angeles this half hour on Tomorrow Be Televised. Simon Applebaum with you from the other court, someplace called New York, here on Blog Talk Radio. If you have a question or comment for Melanie, give us a ring, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Next Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, you have a couple of possibilities in the works. If you weren't with us at the beginning of the show, we have the organizers of Series Fest, and they're making some interesting announcements during their week. We start on Wednesday in Denver at various locations, and we invite the people involved with making those announcements to be on our show this
next Friday. So 1 week from today, we'll see if any of them come on. So join us and see what pops up. That's Friday, 1 week from today, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Not only we just had David Friendly, the executive producer of Queen of the South, USA Network's new series that premieres on Thursday, and it's David's first effort as an executive producer in television, having done film for so many years and some really good films like Little Miss Sunshine and Courage Under Fire with Denzel Washington. Do we have a similar story here with you? Is this your first effort at TV making?
Yes, it is, Simon. First effort.
And how long have you thought about getting involved with television before this came along?
You know, always wanted to be a part of television, you know, always. And, you know, especially the way TV is going nowadays, where I feel like the subject matters are being challenged more in TV and the boundaries are being pushed more in TV, much more than in features nowadays. So I've always wanted to work in TV, and then when James brought this opportunity, I jumped at the idea of being involved with Lifetime, which is a network that I really love. I really think they really take care and hone in and they're women filmmakers. So it was an honor to be able to direct this movie.
And they started this Project Fempire, sort of a spinoff like Empire in the name, which
yes.
is trying to get more women and more women of color to direct, write, produce their television program, whether it's series or their line of original movies. What was the process like to direct for the first time for television? How is it different from doing movies? And what did you have to learn about the process to make it work?
Yeah, you know, one of the one of the challenges was just we shot it over 15 days during December, so it just we were moving really fast. The schedule was tight, but then we had two cameras and we had such a wonderful team that, I mean, I would say one of the challenges was just like how fast we would have to go. But then it's great because you get on this rhythm, and then it's almost great that you're shooting 7 to 8 pages a day, because then nobody has time to stop. The crew can't slow down, you know. And then by day 3 or 4, we were all just like this amazing roller coaster, just going. I really love the team we're working on, and I think it's a tribute to a lot of the people that James brought on board to work, that I brought on board, and then Lifetime brought on board, because it was seriously the first time that I was on set where nobody was being treated differently based on their gender. So it didn't matter where I was, a woman director, a man director, like it just didn't matter. We were all just filmmakers trying to make the best movie possible and having fun on set.
When you started work on this, and we'll talk about your relationship with James Franco in a moment, but did you look at other made-for-TV movies, or did you come in with, let's say, influences that inspired you that you wanted to bring to the table, whether it was watching like classic horror films or classic suspense films, or an Alfred Hitchcock film, or some of the early like ABC Movie of the Weeks of the 1970s. Many of them had like The Woman in Jeopardy or the thriller or suspense, you know, The Person in the Haunted House kind of film.
Yeah, I mean, I did a lot of the ones you mentioned. We did a lot of research on, obviously the original Leather May Sleep with Danger. I saw a lot of the Tori Spelling earlier films. I did research on, really diving into the relationship between Pearl and Leia. And one of the movies that I think is one of the best movies in the past 10 years is Blue is the Warmest Color, which is not a TV movie, but it really pushed the boundaries on the relationship, you know, between two females. So especially for the love scene in this movie, you know, James and I really looked closely at Blue is the Warmest Color, and seeing how they approach that material. And, of course, you know, we're shooting Lifetime, so there's no nudity. But still, we wanted to push the boundaries of the scene without showing nudity, but also being a little bit more edgy. And I think that's what, you know, people that have watched the movie come out surprised, because they're like, oh, I can't believe this is on Lifetime. This is much more edgier. And so that was one of the things we really tried to push with this movie.
James Franco has really evolved from being just an actor and a highly acclaimed actor to being an entrepreneur in television, on the web, in film, and so forth.
What was it like to work directly with him on your first TV project? Did he give you any guidelines, any, like, helpful hints, any sort of direction in terms of dealing with your cast, dealing with your writer, dealing with the production crew, having things work as smooth as possible, being prepared for the unexpected?
Yeah, I mean, I think Simon, all of the above, like all of what you said, I mean, James is such a generous and amazing artist, and he, you know, he loves to teach. You know, he's a great teacher, so I really learned a lot from him through, you know what I mean, in this movie. He brought a lot of the, you know, we discussed, but he brought a lot of the cast members on board. And then with Amber, the writer, I knew Amber from Actors Anonymous because she had a small part in that movie. So it was great to get a chance to work with her again. You know, she was a writer. And James really helped me in doing the schedule, in like approaching the day, especially, you know, the first couple of days, how, you know, little things like, you know, talking with, like, dealing with the network or, like, doing, you know, making sure we get the day. He was there by my side, you know, executive producing, and he was there mentoring. So really, like, I learned so much from James. You know, I would turn to him. We were shooting something, and I would turn to him and was like, what do you think? Like, you know, maybe we should do this or that. And then he would always come up with an idea or then, you know, something else to make it better. Or he was like, no, I think we got it. Or, you know, it was just a very collaborative effort, and really grateful to James because I really learned a lot.
Mother, May I Sleep with Danger, the remake of the classic from 20 years ago, originally presented in September of 1996 on NBC. It premieres tomorrow night on Lifetime at 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. We have Melanie Aikenhead. She is the first-time television director of this project, and we've got her live from Los Angeles right here on Tomorrow We Televise. Simon Applebaum, who are you live from New York? And if you have a question or comment for Melanie, don't be shy. Raise the voice. Use the number 646-652-2906 or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Melanie, now that you've had your first taste of television, where do you want to go in the medium? Do you want to do another made-for-movie? Do you want to stay with Lifetime? Do you want to create a series, develop a series? Which way do you want to go?
I mean, I would definitely love to stay in TV. I think one of the most amazing things about TV is it moves so fast. You know, sometimes in the feature world, features take so long. You know, it takes years. Sometimes, you know, to get the financing and then go shoot the feature and then everything. And what I loved about TV is, like, we shot it, it's done 6 months later, we have the movie, and just that sort of the synergy, that momentum is something that I really love from TV. So I would love to do another TV movie, love to, you know, go into series, but definitely keep venturing into the TV world, which I found fascinating.
And a filmmaker, who are some of your influences? Who do you admire in filmmaking or, for that matter, TV making? Some of whom are both one of the same.
Yeah, I mean, I really, for filmmakers, I really love Derek Chanfrance. He did Place Beyond the Pines and Blue's the Warmest Color. I think he's just a great director. The way he deals with actors, the way he prioritizes the actor's process. You know, sometimes he shoots his movies with one light, and then the rest is just available light. And he gives the actors a chance to move around the room, and I really love the way he approaches filmmaking. So I would say, and then for TV, I'm a huge fan of Jill Soloway. I think what she's done for Transparent is amazing and has pushed the boundaries in TV. So I would say those are my two biggest influences.
And Transparent, which she does, is about to go into season number 4, and she's working on a new series for Amazon, too. And I have a hunch it's going to be in season 3, by the way, comes up very soon. And I think it's going to be another one. By the way, Orange is the New Black premiered at season 4 on Netflix earlier today. And I'll tell you, it looks like it's another winner. The characters just keep coming at you, and the portrayals are unforgettable. And the critics are picking it up. And one critic said, in fact, they think this season is the ground base for maybe 3-4 more seasons to come, just as good.
Wow.
If Lifetime were to say to you in the next few days, you know, Melanie, love this movie, congratulations on what you did. We want you to make another made-for-TV movie, and we'll leave the choice of what you do up to you. Is there a pet book or script or something that you would like to, let's say, if this would be your next project, what would it be?
Yeah, I mean, definitely I would center it on women's stories and their struggles and triumphs in society. I would, two stories. I would love to do an infidelity movie based seeing purely through the woman's perspective. I feel like there's a lot of movies about affairs, a lot of movies about infidelity, but they're mostly told either from like the relationship perspective or just from the male perspective. And I think a story about infidelity seen through a woman's perspective and the struggle, I think would be fascinating to tell.
Mother, May I Sleep with Danger, Lifetime's latest original movie, premieres tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time. That's 8 p.m. Eastern and Pacific Time on Lifetime. Check your local where that network is available in your area on cable and satellite. And for more details about the network online, I believe it's mylifetime.tv or mylifetimetv.com, one of those two, mylifetime.com or mylifetimetv.com. And that will tell you know where Lifetime is available in the area and more details about the film and all the other programs you can find on Lifetime, including the new season on Real, which won the Peabody Award last month. Melanie Aikenhead, director of Mother May I Sleep with Danger, congratulations on entering the TV field with this movie. All the very best with it tomorrow night on Lifetime, and hopefully the beginning of much, much more from you in the TV world.
Thank you, Simon. Thank you so much for having me. It's been great.
It's a pleasure, Melanie. Take care. Have a wonderful weekend.
You too. Have a great weekend.
Melanie Aikenhead, director of Mother May I Sleep with Danger. Again, that's tomorrow night, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific on Lifetime. This past Wednesday, TNT presented the latest American Film Institute Life Achievement Award. Award has been given out for over 40 years. And for the very first time, it was given out not to an actor or director or a writer, but a composer. And probably one of the best composers we have in this country or any country, the Oscar winner, John Williams. It was presented by his collaborator of more than four decades, Steven Spielberg. The timing was marvelous because Williams' latest score is the BFI that premieres, directed by Spielberg, I believe on July 4th weekend. And I hear it is a great, great movie. It was shown in Cannes a few weeks ago. Great reviews from the critics. A lot of people think it's another winner from Mr. Spielberg. It was fun to see Williams' career showcased. Obviously, the highlights like Schindler's List, Jaws, E.T., Close Encounters of the Third Time, but it was also nice to hear some of these scores you don't hear often. Scores like The Reavers, scores like Empire of the Sun, Memoirs of a Geisha, Lincoln, etc., etc., etc. But despite the fact that the show was so well produced and so well put together, and Williams' acceptance speech was very, very humbling and moving, which is the way the man is, there was one aspect of Williams' career that was not showcased, and that was his television music. That's right. Before John Williams was a movie composer, he was a television composer under the name Johnny Williams. And it was the work of the television composer that got him into films in the first place. Williams made his debut as a composer on various television series from Universal, where he was a staff composer. And if you remember a series called Johnny Staccato, headed by John Cassavetes, the private detective at Waldo's, a club, he was a pianist playing on camera when John Cassavetes, in his role as pianist or detective, was not doing his thing with the band. The band included also the wonderful drummer, Shelley Mann. Anyway, Williams did a number of interesting shows for Universal. He did his first big score for a series called Checkmate, which ran on CBS for 2 years, among the stars, the wonderful butler of Family Affair, Sebastian Cabot. And it was his work at Universal that got him into feature films, beginning with a film starring Dick Clark that was just on a Tribe Classic Movies a few weeks ago, Because They're Young, directed by the very underrated Paul Wendkost. And as he continued his film career, he continued his TV career. He did his wonderful scores for shows like Alcoa Presents, featuring Fred Astaire. He won two Emmy Awards for both seasons of that show on ABC. And then his very classy work, including the theme of Bob Hope Presents the Chrysler Theater, one of the last great anthology series in the 1960s for NBC. I was a big fan of that show, and that's what his work for that series was marvelous.
He also did a series called Craft Suspense Theater. It was on NBC for 2 seasons. And if you listen to the theme for the opening season, it might remind you of Jaws. In fact, you could say now it's the precursor of Jaws. You wish that AFI had showcased that. And it also should have showed that it was his work with Orrin Allen on such TV shows as Lost in Space, Land of the Giant, and The Time Tunnel that got him his assignments on Poseidon Adventure and Italian Inferno, both of which resulted in Oscar nominations. Well, I'm sorry that, unfortunately, that oversight was made, but here's the good news. You can see a lot of John Williams' wonderful music and his episodes he did it for on YouTube, whether Craft Suspense Theater, Chrysler Theater, Checkmate, etc., etc. Do check it out. I think you'll really enjoy his music, and a lot of it was a great precursor of what he would do on film for so many decades since. And if you miss the AFI tribute, it'll be repeated on September 12th, opening a lineup of TCM movies and specials featuring John Williams' music. That night will include Jaws, A Masterclass with Steven Spielberg, and The Cowboys, and his wonderful work on one of his first major scores, the musical Goodbye, Mr. Chips with Peter O'Toole. That's the AFI Live Achievement Award to John Williams, September 12th, 8 p.m. Eastern Pacific Time, on Turner Classic Movies. More details at tcm.com. Monday on Tomorrow We Televise, another exciting edition for you. Speaking of music, we'll have someone who could very well be an Emmy Award contender this year for his work on Mr. Robot and American Crime Story, The People vs. O.J. Simpson, Mac Quayle. Also, we'll cover both sides of a Disney Channel doubleheader happening next Friday night. The Disney Mini Series, Babysitting, the made-for-TV movie based on the movie with Elizabeth Shue, directed by Chris Columbus, with executive producer Michelle Manning, and from Disney Channel's latest original series, Bizarre Bark, creators Kyle Stania and Josh Lehman, and executive producer Eric Friedman. It's all coming your way Monday, 3 p.m. Eastern New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow We Televise. And next Friday, depending on what is announced at Series Fest next week in Denver, we may have some of the people involved in those announcements, organizations like Interlude, Season Sparks, etc., on this very program. So stay in touch with us all next week, and we will let you know as things develop. If you came in late on today's program, you want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's www.blogtalkradio.com/televised. Check out the podcast version. It's available 24/7 at iTunes.com. This weekend you can download your smartphone tablet. Take us on the go anytime you like. We always love hearing from you. What do you think about our guest today? And what do you think about where TV is at and where it's going? It's going from very exciting places, I think you heard today. So email me. Love to hear from you. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. It's SimonApple04@yahoo.com. Please enclose your name and don't forget your address. That's how you get involved in our Classic Trivia Question of the Week. And if you would like to suggest a show to know for our regular feature of that name, a show you think deserves more attention on television, let me know. We use your thoughts and you get the credit. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. We love hearing from you, and I do respond to my emails after doing it in 24 hours. Don't forget, you also find me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter. The handle is UBC Simon TWBT at UBC Simon TWBT. We love hearing from you for one simple reason. What you say matters. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants, not necessarily those of Blog Talk Radio. Our production associates are Amy Domestico and Candace Williams. Andy Toe is Blog Talk Radio's general manager. The creator and chief executive of this very enterprise is Mr. Alan Levy. Tomorrow We Televise was brought to you today by Audible.com, a leading provider of spoken audio entertainment and information. Get that 30-day trial at audibletrial.com/televise, audible.com, and Amazon Company. But Tomorrow We Televise, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. We are back here Monday. Another 90 minutes coming your way. 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. That's where we get underway, right here on Blog Talk Radio. Be safe and be great out there. And until next time, stay well and stay tuned.